This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour two of Sharp Money as we move along here on this Monday afternoon. I'm Joe Serallo in for Patrick Maher today. We'll be in for Patrick tomorrow and Wednesday as well, alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, no better way to kick off hour two than with some football, and by heading to our progressive guest line yet again to welcome in the former head coach of the Washington Commanders, Coach Jay Gruden. Coach, do we have you? How are you today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thanks to you. Thank you for the time, and thanks for hopping on with us. And Coach, you know, when you look at your time in Washington and your time just around the league, whether it be as an assistant or as a head coach, you've been around so many guys, players, coaches, who have just gone on that are in the league today, still experiencing so much success. And the one that I want to touch on first, right off the bat, is Kevin O'Connell, the head coach with Minnesota, because they've got a really interesting quarterback room. You've seen O'Connell, his capabilities more so as an assistant. I'm curious what you think he has on his hands here with Sam Darnold, with JJ McCarthy. I'd have to imagine Darnold is going to be the guy that they go to week one for the beginning of the year. McCarthy seems like he's young. He's a little bit of a project. And Darnold's never really had a coach who can get the most out of him before. So I got to know, what can Kevin O'Connell get out of Sam Darnold?
Well, it's to be determined, obviously. I mean, Sam was in San Fran last year. He was pretty good, had a pretty good coach there. But, I think it depends. You know, Sam's got to be put in the right situation with a good amount of weapons, which they do have. They have good tight end. Obviously, they have Justin Jefferson and Addison, two good receivers. But the most important thing when you have a quarterback that's really not sure how good they're going to be, you got to protect them with the running game and the play action game and the bootleg game to get them outside the pocket to make things a little bit easier for them. And that's what Kevin will do. He'll get them some quick passes off that are easy to complete. The bootlegs, which gets the quarterback outside the pocket where he can see down the field a little bit better and take some shots that way, and hopefully not get behind and get into a lot of third down and long situations. And that'll be a struggle for any quarterback there.
Coach, there was a reunion down in Atlanta with a few guys that you worked with also in Washington, Raheem Morris and then quarterback Kirk Cousins, who you won a lot of games in the NFL with. One, first on Raheem and him getting a second chance as a head coach, which rarely happens in the NFL, and then Kirk Cousins and the opportunity he has in that NFC South that does feel wide open with a bevy of weapons for him to throw to. How do you think they fare year one?
Well, they got to fix the defense. I'd say they did a great job getting a very important piece to their offense and getting Kirk Cousins, and obviously drafted Michael Penix for some backup possibilities if Kirk's Achilles isn't quite ready. But I think Kirk will be fine. Kirk takes care of his body extremely well. He's going to have a great year. He's got good weapons to throw to. He's got a hell of a back coming out of the backfield. You know, the biggest concern there is Zach Robinson, the offensive coordinator. It's his first time calling plays and coming up with his own game plan. We'll see how he does. But hopefully Kirk will have his finger on what he likes and what he wants to do and how he wants to attack defenses. But Raheem, you know, he earned it, man. He did a great job. You know, after he got let go in Tampa Bay, he went on and coached some offensive football at Atlanta, coached back to defense at the Rams, and did a great job of that Ram young defense last year. And I thought he deserved another opportunity. He's got a great rapport with the players. He's a great motivator. And I think he'll do a good job. They got to rush the passer better, cover better in the secondary.
Coach, looking at the Falcons right now and that NFC South, they're currently the odds on favorite minus 120 to win that division. There's something about this Tampa Bay team though that I like, and Baker, what he did last year after a guy who had bounced around so many systems in a 2-year span. I'm not ready to rule out the Bucs. What's your forecast? What's your outlook for that division?
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you. I think it's the Bucs division right now. They won it last year.
Wow.
I know that Atlanta got better with the additions that they have, but I still think Tampa Bay and Todd Bowles' defense, they kept the core players, their star players, Mike Evans and David. I think they kept the linebacker, and obviously the safety is really good. So they kept the core intact. They have some experience. Todd Bowles knows what he wants to call on defense. He's going to attack offenses and make it tough. I just think from top to bottom, offensive line, Tristan Wirfs is there, and Baker's continually to improve his game. I think they're still a team to beat. And I think Atlanta's right there. And I think Carolina might shock some people. I think Bryce will have a lot better year this year. I think the running game will be solid. Added some offensive linemen that'll really help protect him, especially on the interior, which is critical for a smaller type quarterback. So they could do a little bit of damage, but I still think it's Tampa Bay's division.
Coach Jay Gruden's with us on the Progressive Guest Line. And, Coach, want to get your expertise on this because Jordan Love's now the highest-paid player in the NFL. And, you know, fans like to freak out about these things. But what we saw from this Packers offense down the stretch a year ago was inspired football on that offensive side of the ball. My question for you is, how difficult is it for a team, for a coach, for a player to put something like that on tape and then repeat it the next year when all these defensive coordinators are finding ways to poke holes in what you want to do?
Yeah, good luck stopping it because their balance is what makes it all click. And if they're one-dimensional, they're not going to be very good. But add in Josh Jacobs, a strong running back will open up things down the field. You're going to have to load up the boxes, try to stop Josh, which will open up the three-level throws, the passes down the field to the young receiving corps, which did an outstanding job getting better. They had two good tight ends, two young tight ends, and Jordan Love proved that he can do just about anything from inside the pocket, quick game, drop back, play action, bootlegs, but all starts with a good sound running game, which they have.
Coach, sticking in that NFC North, when you look at Chicago and a guy you're familiar with and Shane Waldron, who's going to be handed the reins to that offense and, you know, everyone's prized possession, the guy everyone wanted coming out of the draft last year, right? Caleb Williams. Now you look at Williams and he's got incredible weapons to work with as a rookie. What do you think the ceiling is for this offense, this team in Caleb's rookie year? Because I've been looking at him and you've got that win total at 8.5. I do think that they're an 8-win team, and some people are like, how do you not have them over 500? How do you not have them in the playoffs? At the end of the day, he's still a rookie. There still has to be an acclimation period. I think 8-9 would be a very successful rookie season. It's not a knock on them, but I'm curious, what do you think Shane Waldron can get out of Caleb and do with this offense year one?
Yeah, I think he's in a good situation. I mean, it's just a matter of how much can you put on Caleb's plate. How is he picking up the offense? How can he pick up different formations and motions and call the plays in the huddle without looking to the sideline to Lincoln Riley? It's a matter of how much they can put on his plate. If they can put a lot on his plate, then they'll be successful because, like you said, they have the weapons. You know, they have a decent tight end. They have three excellent receivers, four good receivers, actually. But most importantly, defensively, they can stop the run, and they can play good, solid defense with an excellent corner, number one run defense in the NFL last year. So it'll be in games. Now, what does Caleb do when plays break down? That's why they signed him, because he's like a magician back there. But he also made a lot of mistakes. He took a lot of sacks at USC and threw like 30 interceptions. So those are going to be the critical plays throughout the Bears season, the negative plays. If he can avoid the negative plays, then I think the Bears will have a lot of success.
Coach, you know how crazy the NFC East can be. You live that life for a long time, and Dallas has some drama surrounding players getting paid, and most notably that's Dak Prescott. You've gone to battle against him. What is Dak Prescott as a quarterback, and is he someone that the Cowboys could hopefully win a Super Bowl with one day?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, regular season Dak Prescott is pretty damn good. I mean, his numbers are outstanding. I mean, he's whipping the ball all over the place, and there's really nothing he can't do. I mean, he can run. He can pick up first downs with his legs. He can throw the deep ball. He's accurate. He can get to a second and third progression. Mike McCarthy has a good feel for what he wants to do. I like the running game to be a little bit better for him so they don't put too much on Dak's plate. But Rico's going to have to step up. Zeke Elliott's going to have to step up. But Dak's a hell of a player. They got to pay him. There's no doubt about it because quarterbacks are very, very hard to find. There's about 10 to 12 of them that have a chance to win a Super Bowl this year. The rest of the teams will be looking in the draft probably next year and the year after that, the year after that. So take care of Dak, and they'll be successful. Having Mike Zimmer to the defensive coordinator side will help their defense out a lot. They'll attack more often on third down and get the ball back for the Cowboys or get the ball back for Dak, and I think they'll have a lot of success. I still think the NFC East goes through Dallas.
Jay, after asking you about the number one pick in this year's draft, I want to switch to the number two pick and your former team in Washington getting Jaden Daniels. What are your thoughts about Daniels as a prospect and what he can do in this Washington offense? You know, I'm very out on Cliff Kingsbury as a head coach, but now as an offensive coordinator where he only has to focus on what he knows best, what do you think Kingsbury and Daniels can accomplish for this Washington team in year one?
I think it's important for Cliff to make sure he protects the quarterback. You know, I think sometimes he gets a little bit outlandish with his receivers, five wideouts, and doesn't do a good job of picking up some of these blitzes. They got to do a good job of really studying defenses and make sure Jaden's protected and protect them with the play calls, getting them outside the pocket. Like I mentioned with the Minnesota quarterbacks, you know, the quick game and the bootlegs will be critical that way, getting Robinson the ball, getting Eckler the ball, being balanced will help out him a lot. And then you can work some zone reads and get some bootlegs and get him outside the pocket. But he's an ultra-talented kid. We got a couple of really good receivers in Dachson and Terry McLaurin. That'll help out. They added Zach Ertz. They added a tight end in the draft. That'll help out. But really, it's going to be about balance with these guys. I keep preaching on balance for these younger quarterbacks because it is paramount for them not to have to drop back and throw the ball 40 times a game. But he can hurt you a lot of different ways with his legs. He could turn a 5-yard gain for most quarterbacks into a 50-yard gain. So he's going to be an exciting player to watch, and one I can't wait to see on Sunday.
Well, Coach, we appreciate you doing this today. Loved having you on the show. It was awesome insight. Hopefully we'll see you doing some breakdowns somewhere during the NFL season. You do a great job.
Yeah, thank you. I'm on Clean Pocket, a YouTube channel. I work with Underdog Fantasy. So, we'll be doing a lot.
Beautiful.
Me and Cole McCoy and A.Q. Shipley and Justin Pugh.
Love it.
Awesome.
We'll check it
so
out.
Thank you so much, Coach. Appreciate the time.
All right, Matt. Hey, thanks for having me on, fellas.
Make sure you follow him on Twitter, @Coach_JGruden. Hey, Dustin, you know, one thing that he caught my attention with there towards the end, I think it was your last question you asked him, he still believes the NFC East goes through Dallas. What do you have to say about
that? Well, it was interesting. I think you and I, we can talk about how easy it is to find a quarterback out there, but he lived that life. He knows right. What it's like when you have someone like Kirk Cousins and you don't. And while people were always up and down on Kirk Cousins, hot and cold, and whether they thought he could win big games, he was a legitimate franchise quarterback. That's why he said, you pay Dak Prescott. We could discuss that a little bit more when we return about Dak's future in Dallas.
Yeah, I mean, Dak also last year, you know, I know Lamar obviously ran away with the MVP award. When you go down the list, Dak was my number two choice. Even though it was a distant number two, it was still number two. How about some baseball best bets when we return on Sharp Money? Don't go anywhere. We are releasing our VSiN College Football Betting Guide this Thursday. This guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, a preseason top 25, power ratings, and more. So sign up before the end of July and receive both the college football and NFL betting guide, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, and more at the early bird discount of just $1.75. Or sign up on a monthly subscription and get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to offer to turn up your betting game. Don't miss out. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. As Sharp Money moves along into hour two now, I'm Joe Cirillo in for Patrick Maher. I'll be in for him Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week. So don't just worry. Don't think this is a one-time fling, guys. I'll be here a couple more shows alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, I was just telling some of our friends in the back room there when, you know, you got up and you abandoned me during that commercial break that during our interview with Jay Gruden, and, you know, because I'm a cool cat, I played it off. I just got hit with an earthquake here in Los Angeles.
But you got hit with a pretty strong one. 5.1, it looks like, was the magnitude. Yeah. That's pretty legit. So, all right, take me through it. At what point did you feel it and have the realization, oh, this is an earthquake?
So it was really funny because now, you know, I'm from New York, just like you are. Mm-hmm. So we're not used to this. So no. My first, you have to like have your brain trained if you're not from California to be like, oh, wait, it's an earthquake, because it's not something that my brain jumps to quickly. So I'm looking into my webcam here, asking Jay the first question in that interview. And all of a sudden I noticed that my webcam is like, you know, teetering a little bit. And now sometimes it does that when I put it on my laptop, but I'm like, I haven't touched it in an hour and a half, you know? So I'm like, that's weird. I ask him the question, camera cuts away from me. And then I'm on the third floor, which at my apartment building is the top floor. My whole room starts like, it felt like it was swaying back and forth.
Yeah.
Like my stomach is like, I'm on the Tower of Terror at Disney. And I was like, at that point, I was like, oh, crap. Let me go to Twitter, because earthquake Twitter. I don't know if you've experienced earthquake Twitter.
Oh.
Earthquake Twitter is a fun place.
I lived in L.A. for 5 years, so earthquake Twitter was a way to help me realize I wasn't crazy in the moment of an earthquake, right? Because you don't always understand what it is when it's happening. Usually also when there's one or two more to follow, right? Like you can expect there may be another one, some aftershock. Because I had a weekend once where I was on the 11th floor of a building that I lived on in LA, And we had a really big one where all of a sudden, noticed on the bar cart I had in the living room, all the glasses were clinking together. And I'm like, that's a weird thing to randomly happen. Next thing you know, the whole building was swaying like this, back and forth. And it was really freaking me out. The next morning, I wake up and I hear my roommate's bed banging against my wall. Now, I thought it was him and his girlfriend doing their thing.
I was going to say, hey, your roommate had a good morning.
And then I was like, I'm going to stay quiet here. I'm not trying to listen. I'm not a creep. But then I hop into the hallway to use the restroom while that's going on. And they're both sitting on the couch. And I realize we're in the middle of an earthquake right now.
Jeez. Yeah. It's funny. My first one ever, I had just, my dad was visiting out here. And he was staying in my living room because it was at my last place when I was single. My one-bedroom bachelor pad, you know. And we had just gotten home from a late night out, dinner and drinks with some family out here. And I took a shower. It's like 2:30 in the morning. I'm in the shower and I hear my whole apartment starts to shake. I hear like a little bang. The apartment is shaking. And I'm like, geez, now my dad's, you know, late 60s. It was dark in the, I'm like, this guy just freaking fell. And now, the guy beneath me is going to be annoyed because you hear everything.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, great. So the shower's shaking. I'm thinking my dad fell. I come out and he goes, hey, did you fall in the shower? I heard the shower door banging. I said, no, I thought you fell out here. We look at each other. We're like, earthquake.
It's either an earthquake or a ghost.
Right. Well, see, being from New York, I hear the glasses start to tink and clang and everything. And that's what I'm thinking is ghosts.
I also had one when I lived in Washington, D.C., which is unexpected. It actually triggered in New York as well, that same one. And I thought someone was doing it's a, for people who haven't experienced an earthquake, it takes like 15 seconds of it happening to really you're like, oh, this is an earthquake. And somehow you're very aware despite not having gone through it before.
Do you know approximately what year that was when you were in D.C.?
2011-ish, 10.
Okay. So I'm thinking maybe if it was maybe 2012 or so, potentially. I'm thinking because there was one we had in New York, and I didn't even notice it. I was playing high school ball.
2011. August 23rd, 2011. I just moved to D.C. to work at SiriusXM.
And I was playing summer ball and had baseball practice, and then when we got picked up, parents were like, are you okay? There was an earthquake, and we didn't even notice it. We were just on the baseball field and everything, had no idea. But I remember what you're talking about.
Yeah. It's a weird thing. It's a weird until you sit through it, you have no idea what's going on and how, like, real life becomes in the moment.
Yeah. Speaking of baseball, by the way, I wouldn't exactly call this an earth-shattering trade. But an encouraging trade was just made during our last break. Actually, it might have been while we were talking to Jay. Justin Turner going from Toronto to the Seattle Mariners. They get another right-handed bat. I thought it was going to be Vladdy. If I saw the Blue Jays and Mariners did a deal, I thought it was going to be Vladdy. But Justin Turner giving Seattle a little more pop and what's been just a dreadful lineup for a team that has maybe the best pitching in baseball, Dustin.
Yeah, look, I know these aren't sexy moves, but first the Arozarena deal adds offense to a team that desperately needs bats. But also I think what's key with Randy Arozarena is playoff experience, right?
Boom,
he's been there before with St. Louis and Tampa. He dominated a postseason. Now you go get Justin Turner. Justin Turner, a veteran who's been through a lot of postseason games, still crushes left-handed pitching, had a hit today against Baltimore, so I'm guessing they took him out of the lineup. I'm going to go look because I'm about to take a flyer on the Mariners. If they add maybe one more bat and I can get it before this number moves, I think 25, I'm going to see if I can find 30-1 somewhere. I want 30-1. I see 25. Yep.
I just saw that James McCann hit by pitch on
it's
my
brutal.
TV in the background, and that was like disturbing to watch.
He stayed in the game though.
Yeah, he's tough. He dealt with all the boos in New York, so he's got to be tough.
Well, yeah, that was a harder hit than any hit he had in New York. I can tell you that.
He was so bad with the Mets. My goodness.
Let's see what Circa has.
Seattle needs to go get like a Vladdy.
No, they do, but at the same time, I do think with that pitching, you just need to slightly improve. You also have to assume Julio Rodriguez can step up in the playoffs and be a different player power-wise than he's been in the regular season. I do think there's an opportunity for that team to be better. And also, I think there's an aspect where I was talking about the Cardinals being better built for the long haul of a season. The Mariners could be built better for the postseason, the regular season, just because the arms are going to throw at you. And I also like the addition they made of Yimi Garcia the other day to strengthen that bullpen. So I do think pitching is emphasized in October, and rightfully so.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you on the Mariners. They're one of those teams. Every year there's a couple teams where you don't know if they're going to make the playoffs, but if they do, they can do some damage, right? Like the 2015 Mets, they made the playoffs with the worst record of any of the five National League teams to make it, but they had the pitching and they ended up coming out of the league. Hey, only about 2.5 minutes left here. I know, you know, we've got big slates. You've got what, 6 bets? You already gave one out, but you've got about 6 bets on your baseball slate today. I've got 5. Let's hit on a game since we're talking about the Mariners that we both have action on. 2 of my 5 bets are actually in this game. I believe one of yours is. Dustin, I don't do this often, but I've got a same game parlay I love. I was willing to lay the $1.50 on Logan Gilbert over 5.5 strikeouts. He's pitched to better than 10 Ks per nine this year. He's about an inning, a K per inning guy, a little better than a K per inning. But this season, he's going deep into ball games, and the Red Sox strike out 3rd most of any team in baseball at home, 2nd highest K rate at 9.5 per game at Fenway. They're actually worse at home this year than they've been on the road. So Gilbert, if I was going to lay the $1.50 for over 5.5 strikeouts, you just add Seattle money line to that. And on BetMGM, I got +210 for Gilbert over 5.5 Ks, Mariners money line. What are your thoughts on the same game parlay? What's your play for this?
No, we're on the same page here. I love Seattle today. I think they're the side here. We're getting a discount on the better pitcher because the assumption is the offense for the Mariners won't come through. But there's a lot of reasons to think Seattle has a chance to knock some off the big wall in Fenway. First of all, Seattle, I know, is against Chicago. They're coming off a series where they average 7.33 runs per game. And I know it's the White Sox, but that's still Major League bats doing what they need to do. I like them carrying that over into this series. And Nick Pivetta's on the bump. He's gotten hit around by these Seattle hitters for his career. They have a combined 1,100 OPS against him. At -105, you're not usually going to get an opportunity to back the better pitcher in Logan Gilbert in a spot like this. So I'll take that discount and back Seattle.
Now, one more play in this game from my end. I'm with you on Seattle having success against Pivetta. But Pivetta's been pretty good in the first inning this year. Not his last start, but that was at Coors. You can call that, you know, Coors Field's just different. 4 straight nerfies for Pivetta prior to that. Logan Gilbert, 19 nerfies and 21 starts this year. I took the nerfie, only had to lay $1.30. So give me the nerfie, give me that same game parlay at +210. Give Dustin the Mariners money line. Guys, we've got more bets, more winners to come only right here on Sharp Money.
Rolling along here, Sharp Money VSIN, the sports betting network. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Joe Cirillo will be back momentarily. We've got a lot of stuff we have to get to throughout the next hour and a half on this program. Obviously, the baseball trade deadline happening as we speak. For those that missed it, a big 3-way trade earlier today involving the Los Angeles Dodgers acquiring Tommy Edman from St. Louis, Michael Kopech from the Chicago White Sox. The Cardinals in the deal get Eric Fetty from Chicago along with outfielder Tommy Pham, and the White Sox get a couple prospects from the Dodgers and Miguel Vargas, an infielder, has been moved around the corner spots and second base to help them in this long rebuild there. We have some baseball I'll touch on later in the show, some games, a bunch of bets across the board, including a no-win parlay is back for your boy. That's where we take 3 pitchers we think will not record a win for their team, parlay them together, and today's at a nice juicy plus price. More on that later, but first, I want to talk a little college football, because as we've been promoting here on VSiN over the course of the last week, our college football betting guide comes out on Thursday, which meant I had to sit there and do all my deep dives a little bit earlier than I expected when it comes to college football. And I have to tell you, I think we're all underestimating the chaos that a 12-team college football playoff format is going to bring to this sport. I know we want to get lost in the sauce when it comes to NIL and the transfer portal and that impact, but I do think this 12-team playoff format has made things crazy, because we've been conditioned over the years going all the way back to the BCS, where our mindset was one loss and the season is over. And I don't see that playing out that way anymore. Some of these teams have a little bit of wiggle room. And with that, I do think it opens up some opportunities to find some conference champions. Because in the SEC's case, you could lose to another SEC team, still make the playoff. Because let's be real, when this committee of human beings sits down and they choose the best 12 teams to make this college football playoff, what they're going to do is overvalue at the SEC. We've seen that time and time again. The SEC teams lose to other SEC teams. They don't get knocked down as far as maybe a Big Ten, or in this case this year, the Big 12 will look like if they lose to each other. So I do think, because the opportunity for so many SEC teams to be in the mix, I saw a number on a team that I thought was a must fire. And you can come down on either side of this head coach if you want, but Lane Kiffin is indeed a polarizing figure when it comes to college football. We have some people who look back at Lane Kiffin and the way things went in his earlier tries at being a head coach at Tennessee, at USC, and with the Raiders, and they think that's who he's always going to be. And I get it. I completely understand where you're coming from, but I do believe people learn. I do believe people grow. I do believe that Lane Kiffin was a head coach who was humbled at one point, had to go to Florida Atlantic and reinvent himself, had to go be a coordinator in Alabama and Tuscaloosa and learn under Nick Saban. And I think Nick Saban would be honest with you and tell you that as much as he rubbed off on Lane Kiffin and his personality, his humor, his way of lightening the mood, also rubbed off on Nick Saban to a degree based on the stories that I'm seeing. And I say all that to say this. Lane Kiffin did something very pointed last year. I don't know if you guys remember, but Ole Miss hyped up in the rankings. A team on the rise, very obviously. They get smoked by number 2 Georgia in Athens, 52-17. So what does Lane Kiffin do after that game? He doesn't sulk. He doesn't blame people. What he does is he speaks to the media. He uses the media to get to his boosters. He says, quote, "We've got to recruit at a higher level. We've signed 1 5-star. They've signed 24. It kind of shows up at some point. We would have to recruit at a better level, do a better job of recruiting," end quote. That's in getting up to the level that Kirby Smart's gotten the Georgia Bulldogs over the years, with a couple national championships in tow. And here's the thing. Lane spoke, and the boosters answered his call. They hit the transfer portal harder than anyone we've ever seen do so in this new age college football. What Lane Kiffin did was he called out his boosters. He said, "I need more support." They go out and add a former 5-star recruit, Walter Noen. Noen was at Texas A&M, kind of wasting away there, but good on the defensive side of the football. They go out and they grab Florida defensive end transfer, Princely Umamalin. He was second team All-SEC a year ago, had 7 sacks. They lost a running back in the transfer portal over to Ohio State, who also made a lot of moves in the portal. But they replaced him with a bevy of options in New Mexico's Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt and Miami's Henry Parrish Jr., both very productive at the collegiate level. The offensive line, that's always an issue in the SEC, because the SEC is producing all those elite pass rushers you see year after year in the NFL. Well, they add 2 guys to protect their quarterback, Jackson Dart from Washington. Well, why is that relevant? I know Washington had a great year, right? Well, there's an award called the Joe Moore Award. And the Huskies won the Joe Moore Award for the best offensive line in all of college football. Who he's going to protect is a guy who I believe, and Joe Cirillo believes, can be a Heisman contender in Jackson Dart. So we bring Joe back into the show after a bit of a internet issue here. And Joe, I want to just bring you up to speed of where I'm at. I've been breaking down Ole Miss. And yeah, I think there's opportunities in this 12-team format to look at Ole Miss as a team that can make the college football playoff, that can win the SEC at plus 650. The reason I was going into one, Lane Kiffin, getting the boosters to pony up the cash, bring in all of these 5- and 4-star recruits in the transfer portal, but more importantly, the schedule in the 12-team playoff. So I don't think Georgia's ever been given an opportunity like this before to have a mulligan, right? To have a chance to lose a game and still be playoff bound. Well, Ole Miss hosts Georgia this year, And I think it's a very different version of Ole Miss this season. Because of that, I think the SEC on November 9th could come down to that matchup. Ole Miss, Georgia, in the Grove, in Oxford, Mississippi. Because of that, I'm taking a shot at the Rebs to win the SEC at plus 650.
Wow, I love it. First off, Dustin, can you hear me okay?
I got you, man. I got you loud and clear.
Okay, awesome. So that schedule is what jumped out at me. And I think that, you know, we've talked about, you know, obviously the ad reads and the promos for the college football betting guide coming up. Ole Miss is a team I believe you and I both are featured discussing in this betting guide. And it's all because of that schedule for me. You look at, you talk about mulligans, right? Georgia being able to drop the game. Ole Miss, I think that game to me is, you know, either side could lose that game and still be a part of this expanded 12-team college football playoff. That game to me, though, I'm not as high on Ole Miss to win the SEC at plus 650 as I am when I look at that game and I look at the schedule and I say there is value with Jackson Dart to win the Heisman because of this schedule. Because I look at that game against Georgia and I say, what do you need to win the Heisman Trophy? You need a narrative, right? You need a wow moment. That game against Georgia would be Jackson Dart's Heisman moment. Even October 12th in Baton Rouge, that could be Jackson Dart's Heisman moment. Now, LSU doesn't have the leeway, the wiggle room, you know, in losing that game that Ole Miss would have because it's a road game for the Rebels. But Jackson Dart has two games here that are Heisman moments. And then outside of those two games, a really, I'll say, easy, winnable schedule. I think everything just shapes up for Ole Miss to go over 9.5 wins and for Dart to be a worthy Heisman play at a 16-1 was the best price I got.
Yeah, so I'm with you on that bet. I'm with you on over 9.5. I love them to win the SEC. I just think the number is perfect. A couple notes on Jackson Dart. Five of the last six quarterbacks to win the Heisman Trophy were transfers. Jackson Dart originally started at USC. The one outlier was Bryce Young in 2021. Of that group, four of them ended up taking the trophy home after being at their school for at least one season prior. Mayfield and Murray at Oklahoma did it in their third seasons there. You have to remember Murray had a redshirt season. Burrow and Jaden Daniels won their second seasons at LSU. And then last year's Heisman Trophy, the voting ended with three multi-year starting transfer quarterbacks finishing 1, 2, 3. Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, Bo Nix. What does that tell you? A couple things. One, quarterbacks in today's college football are hired guns. They can go to the best situations, the best fits for them. But it also goes to show you that despite the portal being so prevalent, continuity does matter. So coming back to the same system for multiple years does heed positive results. Because of that, Jackson Dart's a guy who was a big-time recruit. He can use his legs, which pads those rushing stats, those rushing touchdowns, to add to what he's going to do through the air. You factor that in with the receiving core. He returns back. They bring in a kid from South Carolina and Antoine Wells. I think everything shapes up for Jackson Dart to be one of my three or four favorite Heisman Trophy bets this year.
Yeah, I couldn't love this play anymore, man. And it's also because of his competition, right? You look at the rest of the class, and Dylan Gabriel at plus 750 is the betting favorite. That's not a number I'm going to take with Dylan Gabriel. Similar to Carson Beck at, I believe, 8-1. I just, you know, Beck plays on the best team. He'll have a great defense. I don't think Carson Beck is a Heisman caliber quarterback, right? If there's one guy that the further I look down this list that I look at and say he's got Heisman stuff, it's Cam Ward. But he doesn't play on the right team, in my opinion, to be under consideration. Jackson Dart, everything kind of clicks there. You mentioned what he does with his legs. 32 touchdowns in the air a year ago. Only 5 picks, by the way. 8 more on the ground. It's a 40-touchdown season. He does it again. He's got a real shot. Don't go anywhere, guys. Sharp money rolls on after this. Dart Money moves along on this Monday afternoon as we get ready to wrap up hour two. No Patrick Maher today, so I'm in for him. Joe Serralo here alongside Dustin Sweetelson. Dustin, your usual partner in crime, taking a well-deserved 22nd straight week of vacation. I love it. Opening me up to more time on the airwaves.
I mean, I can't say anything. I took 3 straight weeks off. He just got an extra week and a half on me. I'm not going to talk smack about that.
I'm not talking smack. I love it, man. It's more time for me to navigate this as we head to the progressive guest line here in wrapping up hour two. And we welcome in from on3.com our guy covering the ACC, Matt Connolly. Matt, how you doing today, man?
Hey, doing great. Appreciate y'all having me on.
Yeah, great to have you. Now, Matt, last week you were covering ACC Media Day, and this is an interesting conference. You know, we once upon a time had a Power Six. Now we're down to a Power Four, and it really seems to be, you know, SEC, Big Ten, head and shoulders above the ACC and the Big 12. But that makes the ACC and the Big 12 pretty intriguing, because I think a lot of people view them as more wide open, more room for parity, right? Anything can happen. Now, I want to tie it into a team that you've spent a lot of time covering specifically within that conference, and that's the Clemson Tigers. How do you see Clemson faring this year? We all know Dabo and, you know, his strange comments about NIL and his somewhat of a refusal to really fully hop on board with this new landscape in college football. How do you think that, you know, helps or maybe hurts the Tigers going into this season?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to quarterback play and Cade Klubnik. You know, the rest of that roster is probably right up there with Miami as far as being the best in the ACC. I mean, that defense is loaded. They've got a lot coming back there. I think Peter Woods will be one of the best defensive tackles in the country this season. They feel good about the receivers. If they can stay healthy, you know, Antonio Williams, Tyler Brown, a couple of former freshman All-Americans that they're really counting on to have big years. And Bryant Wesco is a freshman that's coming in that might be the best receiver on that roster right now. So, you know, I think Clemson is all set up to have a lot of success this year, but it's really going to come down to quarterback play. Cade Klubnik was way too inconsistent last year. There were too many plays where, you know, he didn't necessarily do what was planned as far as the play and what was called and how it was supposed to unravel, and kind of took matters into his own hands instead. And so that resulted in four losses, which is not at all what they expect around Clemson. So, yeah, I mean, I think that they have a shot to be right up there near the top of the ACC. But, again, if they don't get more consistent quarterback play, there are several teams I think that can finish ahead of them in the standings.
Sure, Matt, right now Florida State is favored to win the ACC, and I'm kind of surprised at the pricing on it, just because I don't know if the market's accounting for everything the Seminoles lost in the offseason. You have to replace Jordan Travis at quarterback, the heartbeat of that team, two NFL-style receivers in Keon Coleman and Johnny Wilson. You have to replace Benson at running back, Bell at tight end, and it's DJ Uiagalelei, who you're very familiar with, coming back to the right. ACC now. And I'm not really sure he's a dude who makes plays to win you ball games. Are you surprised that Florida State is the favorite here in the ACC?
I wouldn't say surprised. I think it's, you know, you look at it, they did lose a lot, but they've also done very well in the portal recently. They've recruited just about as well as anyone in the ACC, so there's still a good bit of talent there. But, yeah, I'm with you. I don't necessarily trust their offense either. You know, DJ Uiagalelei is a guy that I watched a lot at Clemson for 3 years, too, when he was a starter. And he's a guy that, you know, it can be really, really good and keep getting a rhythm and, you know, make all the throws like he did against Notre Dame that year when he filled in for Trevor. Or he's a guy that can really struggle and be inconsistent and miss way too many of the easy passes. So, you know, Mike Norvell obviously has a great track record with quarterbacks, and I'm interested to see if he's able to kind of get the best out of DJ. You know, one thing I will say is DJ, his last year starting at Clemson, he was in the Heisman conversation there for a while. I mean, I think it obviously ended horribly, but he really played well for a lot of that year, had a big win at Florida State where he played really well down in Tallahassee and led Clemson to a win against a really good Florida State team. So, you know, if his good can stay good and be more consistent, I do think that they'll be right there too. But there are certainly some question marks there.
Matt Connolly joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter at Matt Connolly on 3. Matt, we're doing a lot of quarterback talk, Clemson, Florida State. Let's talk about the guy who I believe is the best quarterback in this conference, Cam Ward, down in South Beach. And Miami third on the odds board at 4-1 to win the ACC this year. You know, Cam Ward is a cat who I said in the offseason, you know, if he transfers to Ohio State, he's going to be right up there, probably my pick to win the Heisman Trophy. Now, of course, we all know team success is a factor, whether it should be or not. It is a factor in Heisman voting. And so him going to Miami might hurt his stock a little bit for that award. But what is the ceiling for Cam Ward and these Hurricanes this year? Are they a playoff team?
Yeah, I think they're definitely going to be right there in the playoff mix. And, you know, they're my favorite team in the ACC right now. If I had to pick one to win, I would pick them. And I would also, you know, I don't mind the Cam Ward for Heisman bet. I mean, I just think that I kind of view them the same way I did Florida State last year, as far as just a program on the rise, a team that has been recruiting really well, has kept a lot of talent at home. Obviously, Reuben Bain, maybe the best, right up there, one of the best edge rushers in the country. But then you go to the portal the way Florida State did, adding Keon Coleman. That's kind of how I view what Miami did, going and getting Cam Ward and Damian Martinez, as far as just true difference makers who, you know, it's going to take everything coming together, right? Like, that's the caveat is, you know, you don't know team chemistry and how all of that is going to work. But just talent-wise, I mean, they have a very good offensive line returning. You have Cam Ward at quarterback, who is a really good dual-threat QB. Damian Martinez right up there, one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Xavier Restrepo returning on offense at receiver, I think, is something that wasn't talked about enough. He's one of the best receivers in the ACC. So, yeah, I really like that roster, really like the way everything sets up for them. And like I said, if I had to pick an ACC favorite right now, to me, it would be Miami. You know, if everything comes together, I think they can be right there in the college football playoff mix.
I'm on Miami as well, but I'm also a Miami fan, so I understand my bias and my excitement here. And I've seen times in this league where teams have flown under the radar, and the transfer portal, Matt, has allowed a few of these teams to bring in some quarterbacks with a lot of experience and a lot of upside. So outside of the first three teams we named, the next three on the betting board, Louisville, plus 650, NC State, 7-1, Virginia Tech, 10-1, they all have interesting quarterbacks. Louisville has Tyler Shough coming in. NC State has Grayson McCall coming in. And the one who perhaps has the biggest upside is VaTech's Kyren Drones. If you were going to pick one of those three to upset and win this league, which one would it be?
I think it would probably be NC State. And I'm just a big believer in Dan Dorn, or Dave Dorn, and the job he's done in Raleigh. I mean, he's just been there, I think, 12, 13 years now. And has just kind of continued to build and build and get better and better and put better rosters together. And so, you know, obviously it depends on Grayson McCall staying healthy. He's battled several injuries in his career, kind of dealt with some concussion issues last year. And so they really need him to stay healthy. But if he does, you know, I really think they just have the team that can do it. They have a excellent defense that just always seems to be right up there with one of the best in the ACC. You know, KT Concepcion might be the best receiver in the ACC. I mean, he's a guy that I don't think gets enough credit nationally as far as just a difference maker that they try to get the ball to different ways. And you know, McCall, when he was at Coastal Carolina, really just made plays. You know, he was just a gamer. He was a guy that every time he stepped on the field, he had that swagger, that confidence you want in your quarterback where you feel like you have a chance to win. So, yeah, if he can stay healthy, I certainly think they have a chance to make some noise this year.
I was Grayson McCall still in college football. I feel like this guy's my age by now. Matt, you know, as we look down that odds board a little bit, and Justin kind of took the words out of my mouth with that last question, but I want to piggyback and take it a step further. Is there a newcomer to the ACC that you could see making some noise? The Big 12 has that, obviously, with Utah, with Arizona. But what about a team like SMU? Can you see the Mustangs coming in here year one? Obviously, those other ACC teams that know each other so well don't know the Mustangs as well. Can they kind of, you know, wreak a little havoc in this conference? Or do you think, you know, that 15-1 is appropriately priced because that they're maybe on the second tier of those teams?
Yeah, I was going to say, without a doubt, as far as the newcomers, to me, it's SMU. And they're just a program at a university that is incredibly motivated to win. You know, they really wanted to get in the ACC. I mean, they're not getting a whole lot of financial gain coming to the ACC right, with the way that it's set up. But it's just a program that, you know, wanted to be in a power conference, felt like they should be back there in Dallas. They have a ton of funds, a ton of NIL funding. They did a really good job. And the transfer portal this year, they brought a ton of their talent back. To me, the question mark with them is just on the lines of scrimmage, just taking that step up and coming into a Power Four conference. You know, I think that's going to be tough in some areas. But, yeah, I mean, I you know, I feel really good about SMU, and I like the way the schedule sets up. You know, I think I wouldn't be surprised at all if they maybe drop their first two but turn around and go 6-2, finish, you know, in within striking distance of making the ACC championship game.
Yeah, definitely a favorable schedule there for the Mustangs. And like you mentioned, no shortage of funding behind SMU. Matt, thanks so much for the time. Go give him a follow on Twitter at Matt Connolly on 3, hour 3 of Sharp Money up next.